This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 77 to 78 of chapter Al-Hajj from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parhizkar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. يا أيها الذين آمنوا اركعوا واسجدوا واعبدوا ربكم وافعلوا الخير لعلكم تفلحون. يا أيها الذين آمنوا اركعوا واسجدوا واعبدوا ربكم وافعلوا الخير لعلكم تفلحون. وجاهدوا في الله حق جهاده هو اجتباكم وما جعل عليكم في الدين من حرج ملة أبيكم إبراهيم وَسَمَّاكُمُ الْمُسْلِمِينَ مِنْ قَبْلُ وَفِي هَذَا لِيَكُونَ الرَّسُولُ شَهِيدًا عَلَيْكُمْ وَتَكُونُوا شُهَدَاءَ عَلَى النَّاسِ وَسَمَّاكُمُ الْمُسْلِمِينَ مِنْ قَبْلُ وَفِي هَذَا لِيَكُونَ الرَّسُولُ شَهِيدًا عَلَيْكُمْ وتكونوا شهداء على الناس فأقيموا الصلاة وآتوا الزكاة واعتصموا بالله هو مولاكم فنعم المولى ونعم النصير. صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. O you who believe, bow down and prostrate yourselves and serve your Lord and do good that you may succeed. and strive hard in the way of Allah, such striving as is due to Him. He has chosen you and has not laid upon you any hardship in religion. The faith of your father Ibrahim, he named you Muslims before, and in this, that the apostle may be a bearer of witness to you, and you may be bearers of witness to the people. Therefore, keep up prayer and pay the poor rate and hold fast by Allah. He is your guardian. How excellent the guardian, and how excellent the helper.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
A young Palestinian man succumbs to injuries that he sustained during last month's Israeli attack on the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. The Israeli Prime Minister pauses his plan for judicial reform after it triggered a general strike, political division, and mass protests. And France is bracing for another day of protests as President Emmanuel Macron remains defiant over his controversial pension reforms. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. A young Palestinian man has succumbed to injuries that he sustained during last month's Israeli attack in the occupied West Bank. Amir Lola was hit by gunfire during a raid by the regime forces on the city of Nablus in late February. Israeli troops had killed 11 Palestinians and wounded scores more on that day. Israel has intensified its deadly crackdown on Palestinians since the formation of a new far-right cabinet under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Regime forces have killed at least 92 Palestinians in the occupied territories this year so far. Mona Kandil is a correspondent joining us. Mona, so tell us how this person is now pronounced dead, what happened on that day and what he died from eventually.
On the 22nd of February, Israeli forces raided Nablus area in order to arrest Palestinians. The Israeli military at that day claimed that they were fighters and they had been taking part in anti-Israeli operations and planning for operations against the Israeli military. This operation on the 22nd of February led to the killing of 11 Palestinians, including at least two fighters, as the Israeli military has described them, and dozens were wounded. 23-year-old Amir Lolah was wounded on that day last month, and he remained in hospital in Nablus city. He was from Nablus. Today, the Palestinian paramedics said that Amir succumbed to his injuries, and this brings the number of Palestinians who had been killed by the Israeli forces since the beginning of 2023 to over 91 Palestinians. The majority of those people who had been killed by the Israeli forces were in Jenin and in Nablus. In Jenin alone, 38 Palestinians were shot dead by the Israeli forces during military raids and during clashes that took place between Palestinian fighters and the Israeli forces. In addition to 22 Palestinians had been killed by the Israeli soldiers in Nablus alone. In Al-Khalil, 7 Palestinians were killed. In Al-Quds, 6 Palestinians. In Ariha, the city that is also known as Jericho, at least 5 Palestinians were shot dead by the Israeli soldiers. We have to mention that since the beginning of 2023 and even in the last months of 2022, Israeli forces had been escalating their operations to several areas in the occupied West Bank, mainly to Jenin and Nablus. To ask why? Because the Palestinians had formed a number of Palestinian resistance groups in Jenin, known as Jenin Brigade. In Nablus, it was known the Lion's Den. Those two resistance groups include young Palestinians who are not affiliated to any of the well-known Palestinian factions. They were engaged in clashes, in anti-Israeli operations, in shooting and exchange of fire at the Israeli military checkpoints. And yes, this led to the killing of Israeli soldiers at the military checkpoints, and a number of Israeli forces were wounded as well. This angered the Israeli military, and that's why they continue to raid these areas on a daily basis.
Yeah, at this point, you know, the news is dominated by what's happening regarding these protests that are happening inside Israel. But at the same time, are we seeing, what are we seeing in terms of these raids? Are we seeing an increase, or is it continuing the way it has been, or has there been a decrease?
Well, for the Israelis and Israeli commentators, they say that Netanyahu is clever. At the time when the Israelis are protesting and going down to the streets, calling for this Israeli far right wing to leave, and Netanyahu to go from being a prime minister. At the same time, they know that in order to silence and release the Israeli settlers, then at the same time, Israeli military action and Israeli military measures would increase in the occupied West Bank. So we'd be witnessing daily raids and incursions to the Palestinian areas. More Palestinians would be arrested. Since the early hours of today, at least a dozen of Palestinians had been arrested up till the moment. Yesterday, over 25 were arrested by the Israeli forces. Homes are being destroyed as well. Israeli forces are taking measures of the homes of Palestinians who carried out operations in preparation to destroy them. So yes, at the same time, Netanyahu is facing a protest, and protest in the Israeli street, he would continue to escalate the aggression against the Palestinians in a way or another, to tell the Israelis that what he's doing is for their sake, and what he's doing is to protect the Israelis and to make sure that Palestinians would never be allowed to have their independent state, and that the Israeli settlers are feeling safe and secure in their homes that were illegally built in the occupied West Bank.
Thank you very much for that. Monica Ndilda from Occupied Ramallah. Thank you. Well, the Israeli Prime Minister has announced a pause to divisive judicial reforms moving through Parliament after months of street rallies that drew tens of thousands of protesters. Benjamin Netanyahu says that he has made this decision to prevent a rupture among people. Party ally to Netanyahu says that he has decided to delay the process for discussions on the reforms package to next month. Israel has been rocked by 12 consecutive weeks of street protests against the plan. Earlier on Monday, Israel's top trade union also announced a general strike. The reforms have also created divisions inside the cabinet. Netanyahu has sacked his minister for military affairs for opposing the reform plan. The Israeli president urged the cabinet to halt his plan to protect what he called the unity of the people. Millions of people took to the streets in several Yemeni provinces on Sunday to mark the anniversary of the Saudi-led invasion of the country in 2015. Yusuf Mari has the latest from Sana'a.
Quranic verses and anti-Israeli and U.S. slogans rank high in this year's National Day of Resilience demonstration in the capital Sana'a, where protesters celebrated what they called 9 years of successful resistance against the Saudi-led war, which began back in March 26, 2015. Yemen's Supreme Political Council leader, Mohammed Ali al-Houthi, who was present at the demonstration, said the armed resistance against all enemies of Yemen will continue until every inch of Yemeni land is liberated from foreign presence.
We must protect our resistance effort and continue to counter this enemy. We must march forward together and confront this enemy. We must focus more on the battlefront and prepare for it now more than ever before. We must support our Ministry of Defense, which is equipped with men who have the hearts of lions, men who will teach the enemy a lesson they will never forget.
When Saudi Arabia launched its war back in 2015, it said it would destroy all heavy weapons possessed by Ansar Allah and force them to withdraw from the Yemeni capital. What has happened, however, is quite the opposite. The Ansar Allah movement has managed to win the battle across the board, developing sophisticated weapons and taking over more territory. They've also managed to win the hearts and minds of the majority of the people in the north.
We have been at war for 9 years, and we will continue to go to war for another 90 years if we must. We will never surrender, no matter how much they bomb. Our faith is in Allah, and it will never be shaken.
We came out in this huge protest to send a message to the Saudi-led coalition that we will remain resilient and we will never betray our cause, even if they add another 9 years to the previous 9 years of war. With our military of believers in Allah, we are coming for you. We are coming with our ballistic missile.
According to Muhammad Ali al-Houthi, if the Saudi-led coalition continues its war on Yemen, they will only witness greater losses and a bigger humiliation.
The war that was only supposed to last a few weeks has entered its ninth year. What's even more surprising is that the Yemeni army is stronger now than ever before. That's because they have developed long-range ballistic missiles and drones, which could be used if the war continues. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
North Korea has unveiled new, smaller nuclear warheads amid mounting tensions on the Korean Peninsula. Experts say the unveiling marks a progress in miniaturizing warheads that are powerful, yet small enough to mount on intercontinental ballistic missiles, capable of striking the U.S. It comes as a U.S. carrier strike group is set to arrive at a naval base in South Korea after conducting joint military drills. The North calls those drills rehearsals for an invasion on its territory. Amid tensions, the North's leader has called for scaling up the production of weapons-grade materials to boost the country's nuclear arsenal. Kim Jong-un says the policy is solely aimed at defending the country and bringing peace and stability to the region. France braces for another day of strikes and protests over the controversial pension reforms. The day of action on Tuesday, called by unions, is the 10th such mobilization since protests started in mid-January against the legislation. People are angry over the overhaul, which includes raising the retirement age from 62 to 64. Similar strikes and protests on Thursday saw the most violent clashes yet between protesters and security forces, turning into pitched battles on the streets of Paris. The protests erupted after President Emmanuel Macron, almost 2 weeks ago, pushed the new pension law through Parliament using a special provision, sidestepping any vote. Unions have vowed no let-up in mass protests to get the government to back down. The Scottish National Party has elected Hamza Yousaf to be the country's next leader. He is the first Muslim to lead a major UK party. Yousaf vowed to deliver independence from the United Kingdom and to reunite Scotland with the EU. Earlier, we discussed the matter in our news review program.
Welcome to another edition of the News Review. In this edition, the ruling Scottish National Party has elected Health Minister Hamza Yousaf to be the country's next leader. He has vowed to deliver Scottish independence from the United Kingdom. Yousaf also promised to win over those who were opposed to a split from the United Kingdom. He said that he would reunite Scotland with the European Union. Yousaf won 52% of the party's member votes in the second round to succeed Nicola Sturgeon, who resigned unexpectedly last month. The 37-year-old is the first Muslim to lead a major UK party. He was born in Glasgow with a father from Pakistan and a mother from Kenya. He is set to be confirmed as Scotland's next First Minister in a nominal vote at the Parliament on Tuesday. The election campaign was marked by bitter personal attacks, exposing deep divisions in the SNP. For more on that, we're joined by Amina Taylor, our correspondent who's joining us live from London, and also Tony Gosling, an investigative journalist who's joining us live from Bristol. Let's begin with our very own Amina Taylor, our correspondent from London. Amina, tell us more. First of all, it seems to be quite significant to have a Muslim leading this party as the first time.
Well, it is and it isn't, if I'm going to be brutally honest with you, because Hamza Yousaf, of the three candidates for the SNP leadership contest here, was actually the most experienced just in terms of frontline politics. There were a couple of issues where his faith actually became front and center. But apart from that, I believe it was more his closeness to Nicola Sturgeon, the first minister who stepped down, that actually exposed a few more question marks. I've always found, surprisingly enough, Scottish politics to be a little bit more egalitarian. But I do know now that he is in the driving seat, now that he is the man who's been given that torch to order to try and drive through Scottish independence, his ethnicity, his religion, aspects of his faith, his personal life, those elements will come to the fore with a little bit more, shall we say, investigative introspection. So it's going to come up. You're going to hear perhaps folks who didn't have an interest in Scottish politics so much having something to say about the new First Minister. I believe it's a formality. He will be confirmed tomorrow. It will expose some of the racism. It will expose some of the Islamophobia. But I don't think that was front and center of Hamza Yousaf's campaign here.
Okay, so Mr. Gosling, let's bring you in and see what this campaign promise means exactly. A generation, in his own words, that will deliver Scottish independence. How likely is that to happen?
Well, it's not going to happen, and I can say that categorically. The Scottish National Party, the SNP, have got a series of serious problems. I mean, for example, having a Muslim leader is not, you know, it's not a Muslim country. And so this doesn't really bode well for it. It probably means that the SNP are going to lose more votes. So in the leadership election, he was, you know, the press was saying he was going to win. And of course, you know, a lot of the polls were saying he was going to win, largely because he was a loyal devotee to the party, and the party were pushing him. But the problem is, although he was a health leader right the way through the pandemic, what we had from him was virtually nothing. All the health announcements were made by Nicola Sturgeon, so he was a kind of behind-the-scenes character. And the Scottish National Party have got an even bigger problem, and that is, if you look at the polls, including ones which happened straight after the vote for Brexit back in 2016, around about 45% of the Scots want to remain with the UK, and about 35% want to leave the UK. So the SNP is trying to push independence, which the Scottish people don't actually want. So, you know, again, what you're going to get is you're going to get other parties like the Greens starting to succeed. The SNP are stuck in a rut, and they're not learning the lessons of Sturgeon. I mean, the reason she went, and by the way, it wasn't a surprise, because the SNP had been falling so badly behind in the polls, losing seats, losing control of the Holyrood Parliament, and so something had to change. Her going was completely expected. What is the whole gender recognition legislation that Sturgeon and Hamza Yousaf and actually one of the other candidates, Kate Forbes, was pushing as hard as they could. Now, this is also very unpopular amongst the Scottish people. So what we've got is we've got a political class in Scotland, in the SNP particularly, who are just not listening to the voters. And so that's why they're not going to succeed. And they're certainly not going to succeed in independence, unless, of course, Westminster really makes a mess of things, in which case the Scots... I mean, because the Scots don't want to go back to being controlled by Brussels.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tony Gosling, investigative journalist, and our very own Amina Taylor. That was a great debate. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of the News Review.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت القرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب
The supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among thy troops are the victors, and place me in thy party, for thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among thy friends, for thy friends, no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging. And to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household the good, the pure, and his household the good, the pure, and his companions the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. As a reminder, we discussed the escape of Abul Hassan Bani Sadr, the first Iranian president, from the country, and the election of Muhammad Ali Rajai. Today we are going to dwell upon the very short period of Rajai's presidency, which ended in his martyrdom by MKO terrorists. Stay tuned, please. After the dismissal of Abul Hassan Bani Sadr and his escape from the country, the second round of presidential elections were held in Iran in mid-summer 1981. Thus, Muhammad Ali Rajai was elected as the second president of the Islamic Republic of Iran with 13 million out of 14.7 million votes. A few days after the elections, Rajai was endorsed as president by Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him. In his edict of endorsement, Imam Khomeini had recommended Rajai to be loyal to his covenant with God, not to fear the reproaches of ill-wishers, and to devote himself to the service of downtrodden masses. During the ceremony, Rajai promised to put into effect the demands of the people. Muhammad Ali Rajai was an honest lover of Imam Khomeini and the people. He would humbly boast of having spent part of his life as a peddler. This way, he announced that he was quite familiar with the suffering of the poor and the needy. He had worked as a teacher for years and had also been tortured in the dungeons of the Pahlavi regime. One day after the endorsement of his presidency by Imam Khomeini, Rajai swore at the parliament, and soon he introduced Mohammad Javad Bahonar as his prime minister. Within a few days, his cabinet was approved by the MPs, and he started his work in early August 1981. One day, Rajai asked Haj Ahmad if he could meet Imam Khomeini's wife for condolences on the demise of her son-in-law. Having got the permission, Rajai went to Imam Khomeini's house and Ms. Saghafi came to him. Muhammad Ali Rajai told her, "Condolences on passing away of Ayatollah Ishraqi. I ask you to pray for me not to be deceived by power. I have pleaded God for martyrdom." Imam Khomeini's wife told him, "I congratulate this responsibility to you and always pray for officials to serve the people well." The whole period of Rajai's presidency was less than 1 month. He was martyred while he was in a session with Prime Minister Muhammad Javad Bahonar at the Prime Minister's building. These two old friends were martyred through a bomb blast that had been placed in a tape recorder to record the negotiations. The plot was carried out by Masood Kashmiri, who was a member of the MKO terrorist outfit, but had been known as a sincere follower of Imam Khomeini and lover of the revolution and people. Amazingly, on the day of the funeral of the president and the premier, there was a coffin containing some ashes. It was said that the ashes belonged to Kashmiri, whereas he had exited the room of the session as soon as he had placed the record player and fled the country. Kashmiri had successfully deceived many officials through deceptive conduct. He would even adopt stances against the MKO terrorist grouplet in his talks with various officials. Imam Khomeini's wife, after hearing of Kashmiri's behavior and personality, had said, "Although we shouldn't be deceived by the appearance of people, this appearance shouldn't make us suspicious of everyone. I have a criterion here. If a person is more Catholic than the Pope, I become suspicious of him." Muhammad Ali Rajai's martyrdom was a very sad event in the history of the Islamic Revolution, as he was the symbol of rationality, devotedness, commitment, sincerity and simplicity. Imam Khomeini described him, "Mr. Rajai was a man who had been a peddler, but this spirit was not impacted through the period of working as a peddler till presidency. It was not the chairmanship which had affected Rajai and Bahonar, rather, they had affected chairmanship." In reaction to Bani Sa'd's stance, who had called Rajai as devoid of specialty and unqualified for premiership, the Imam had said, "Rajai's reasoning is superior to his knowledge." Ayatollah Khamenei described Rajai as an independent person who loved people and was a pain in the neck for liberalists and counter-revolution forces. Although the martyrdom of Muhammad Ali Rajai and Muhammad Javad Bahonar was a shock to the people, within a month after this sad event, the third round of presidential elections was held in the country and Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei was elected as president with 95% of the votes. Dear listeners, we will continue the discussion in the next episode.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. The oppression of the Palestinian people by the Israeli regime has always been accompanied by a disinformation drive to conceal the reality of Zionism. But the internet's enabled citizen journalists in Palestine to expose the brutal truth to a worldwide audience. And the growing potency of the resistance in Palestine has seen the Zionist propaganda machine become increasingly desperate. We'll be discussing this phenomenon after Latifa Abouchakra's report into the Times of Israel that was launched just over 11 years ago to peddle Israeli propaganda.
Palestinian children are the explosives of the future. This is the headline of a Times of Israel article this year. Is this to be understood as an incitement to genocidal violence against Palestinian children? The website claims to be viewed 35 million times a month. So considering that wide level of influence, it is necessary to delve into the infrastructure behind the propaganda. The Times of Israel was founded in 2012 by former Israeli soldier David Horovitz and billionaire Seth Klarman. David Horovitz is a recipient of the B'nai B'rith World Center Lifetime Achievement Award. In congratulating Horovitz on his award, former Israeli Prime Minister and at the time Economic Minister Naftali Bennett described Horovitz's journalism as holy and claimed that it offered a real opportunity to the State of Israel. B'nai B'rith is a key part of the World Zionist Organization, formerly part of the World Zionist Congress, and states that one of its core objectives is to support the State of Israel. The lobby group even has a Bureau of International Affairs, which engages with the British Foreign Office and foreign embassies on behalf of Israel. B'nai B'rith is so deeply entrenched in the worldwide Israel lobby machinations that it even shared an office space with the Israeli project in Washington, D.C. Seth Klarman is the CEO of the Baupost Group, a hedge fund based in Boston. It's a large shareholder in eBay, Google, Facebook, the arms tech company Viasat, and Intel Corp, which has numerous contracts with the U.S. military and Lockheed Martin. Baupost is also a major shareholder in Liberty Global, which owns Virgin Media. Through his Klarman Family Foundation, the billionaire owner of the Times of Israel, Seth Klarman, has funded many key Israel lobby groups. The ADL, the Root Institute, and the Institute for National Security Studies, which is headed by Amos Yadlin, the former head of Israeli military intelligence, have all received funds from Klarman. The Middle East Forum, which is headed by a former employee of the Israeli Ministry of Defense, Greg Roman, has also received Klarman funds. Another group he funded is the Center for Security Policy, which gave Donald Trump the idea for the Muslim ban, which sought to prohibit the entrance of people from Muslim nations into the United States. In addition to funding the Republican Party in the U.S., Klarman also funds the building of illegal Jewish-only colonies in the Israeli-occupied West Bank of Palestine, through the Central Fund of Israel. He has also pumped money into the settlers of Silwan and Sheikh Jarrah through the Friends of David organization. It is clear that the Times of Israel is an arm of Israel lurching into the public sphere. For how long will it be free to call for the genocidal violence against the children of Palestine?
As always, we're joined by our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and is now a non-resident senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zayem University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog, Spinwatch, and he's a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. Our guest expert today is Tony Greenstein. Tony's been on the show before, so our regular viewers will remember that he's a veteran anti-Zionist activist and a prolific blogger. He's a founding member of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, as well as Jews for Boycotting Israeli Goods. Tony's been a long-standing anti-fascist campaigner, and he's the author of A History of Fighting Fascism in Brighton and the South Coast. Ken Loach says his latest book, titled Zionism During the Holocaust, is essential reading. And Professor Ilan Pappi says it offers a comprehensive and incisive analysis of the nexus between anti-Semitism and Zionism. Welcome to the show. David, what did you make of that headline there that said that Palestinian children are the explosives of the future?
Well, this is the tendency of Zionism. It's moving more and more towards a fascist approach. And so it becomes more and more openly genocidal. But it's the tendency which has been there from the beginning. It starts off at the beginning being a socialist movement, as it saw itself. But it always had the tendency, always had to have the tendency, to want to expel the Palestinians. And that tendency is only showing itself much more nakedly now. And we now see, even in papers like the Times of Israel, naked promotion of genocide.
Mm. Tony, I mean, what's your estimation of the journalism in the Times of Israel?
Well, it's ostensibly neutral, and I think that's its strength. It isn't obviously a propaganda paper, so it names itself the Times of Israel, just like the Times of London or the Times of India. And so in that sense, it gulls people into thinking it has no inherent bias, whereas, of course, we know that underlying it is a Zionist bias in favour of the Jewish state. But it hides its bias better than, say, various Israeli newspapers do, free sheets and so on. So, yes, it is. It's much more effective.
Yes, as a propaganda tool.
Yes, and it also has some serious articles which do look at Israeli society. So
sure,
it isn't simply a free sheet.
Right, OK. Well, David, I mean, what do you know about this character, Seth Klarman?
So Klarman is based in the US in Boston, but is obviously very active through the Times of Israel in the propaganda of the paper itself. But he's also extremely active in funding a whole range of different Zionist organizations, both in 48 Palestine and also in North America, the ADL, for example, and also
ADL being the Anti-Defamation League,
the organization which says it's set up to fight anti-Semitism, but which of course can't tell the difference between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, as many of these organizations can't. Also involved with the Israel Project, an organization based in the US in New York. I remember years ago now, some 13 years ago now, with Spinwatch, we exposed this organization called Reality EU, based apparently in London, but which is also actually based in New York offices of the Israel Project, an organization funded by Klarman. So these organizations have many, many different tentacles and fronts, and they're there to promote Zionism, come what may. And so he's on both sides of this. He's there to pump out propaganda on behalf of Zionism through think tanks and the like, including in Israel, and also there to promote the lies that the think tanks pump out through the paper.
Sure. Tony, I mean, what should we deduce, do you think, from Naftali Bennett saying that the journalism of David Horowitz represents an opportunity for Israel?
Well, precisely because much of Israeli propaganda or Hasbara doesn't now have a great effect because people can see through it. It is essential to have something which appears to be neutral, but which is actually trying to achieve the same effect. If I can go back to one of your questions about children, Palestinian children being an explosive issue, of course, this was a theme of Heinrich Himmler, why do they need to kill Jewish children? It was because they would grow up to be the avengers of their parents. This is very similar. Yeah. They are a demographic threat to the Jewish state because it's an ethno-nationalist Jewish state. And therefore, you always think, how many Arabs were born in the night? Is our majority going to be reduced?
So
that's the racist mentality behind it.
And just briefly unpack or explain what Hasbara is, because you mentioned that.
Hasbara is the Hebrew word for propaganda, in essence. Yeah. It's an information war, and you have to get your message across in however subtle a way.
Yeah. Well, David, you know, B'nai B'rith gave Horowitz an award and shared an office space with the Israel Project. I mean, that's the organisation which Horowitz's partner, Klarman, was a major donor. I mean, it sounds a bit too close for comfort, doesn't it?
Well, there's no division between conflicts of interest in the Zionist movement. They're all part of the same project. Yeah. There's multiple overlapping financial flows, memberships, prize winning, scratching of backs, you know, and so they're there to try and promote Zionism, and it doesn't really matter to them, you know, if there's things like conflicts of interest, because they're absolutely enmeshed in a very tight network.
Mm-hmm. Tony, I mean, what can you tell us about the genocidal ideas then of Zionism?
Oh, well. There are different wings of Zionism, and this comes primarily from the religious Zionist, religious nationalist part, which goes back to the Bible and interprets from, say, the Talmud, the most racist themes, if you like. And one of those is that the historic enemy of the Jewish people was the Amalekites, and the Palestinians today offer the Zionists the Amalekites. And the religious Zionists, I mean, they brought out a book to Israeli rabbis, Rabbi Yitzhak Shapiro and Yosef Alitzur, in 2009, Torat HaMelech, the King's Torah, which gave a legal justification for killing not only Palestinian combatants, but Palestinian children, because they were seen as the enemy of the Zionists. They would grow up to be the future, if you like, warriors, so they had to be killed in the first place. And also, by killing the king's children, you would wound the king himself. I mean, that was the logic and justification.
I wonder if you might say a word as well about the connection between Vladimir Jabotinsky and fascism, because I think there's a link there, isn't there?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, the revisionist Zionists were founded on the basis of admiration for fascism. I mean, the very first agreement that Jabotinsky made was someone called Simon Petliura, who led the Ukrainian pogromists, who killed at least 100,000 Jews in Ukraine. Mm. And Jabotinsky, who was then a member of the Zionist executive, formed an alliance with it. So actually, his members fought alongside these genocidalists against the Bolshevik Revolution, because that was their main enemy. The rest is history. Petliura himself was assassinated in Paris by someone whose family had been butchered by the White Russians. Mm. And there was a famous trial in Paris where he was acquitted by a Parisian jury, right, because of what had happened. But his members, Betar, the youth movement, trained in Mussolini's Civita Vecchia naval base.
Do you think Jabotinsky's got any sort of influence in modern thought in Israel today and influence on Zionism?
Well, absolutely, because he wrote this very famous essay called The Iron Wall. In other words, we must not give an inch. Right. The Palestinians will only understand force, which is, of course, a fascist idea. And that has percolated through Zionism. I have to say that Jabotinsky's ideas today are relatively mild in terms of people like Ben-Gavir or Smotrich, who far outweigh him.
Indeed.
I mean, Jabotinsky never advocated genocide, whereas Ben-Gavir, coming from Kach, and Smotrich, with wiping out the town of Huwara, are clearly, they are in the line of Judeo-Nazis.
Absolutely. Well, we're just going to pause there for a second, if we can, Tony, because I just want to show another report now into the inflammatory commentary that's actually published by the Times of Israel.
Does the Times of Israel have a thing about calling for genocide against Palestinians? The article mentioned in our first report is not the first time that the Times of Israel has called for genocide against them. Another example took place in 2014, 2 years after its founding, when Yochanan Gordon wrote a controversial blog post on the Times of Israel website. The title of his piece was "When Genocide is Permissible." Within it, Gordon compared the ground invasion of Gaza, carried out by the Israeli military, to an NBA basketball game. His piece hit out at politicians and news channels for pointing out the numbers killed by Israel during a campaign that saw over 2,000 Palestinians exterminated. He concludes his tirade with the following sentence. If political leaders and military experts determine that the only way to achieve its goal of sustaining peace is through genocide, is it then permissible to achieve these responsible goals? Following a significant backlash online, the article was removed by the Times of Israel editor, Miriam Hirschlag, who claimed it breached the website's editorial guidelines. Hirschlag has a history of publishing pieces written by serving Israeli soldiers to beatify the image of the army of occupation. When challenged online and asked if the publication of the piece involved the military directly, her answers were evasive. This would cast a question mark over Israeli military involvement at the Times of Israel on an institutional level. As for Yochanan Gordon, his piece calling for genocide against the Palestinians was also printed in his father's newspaper, the Five Towns Jewish Times. Naturally, the newspaper is printed to serve the towns of Nassau County on Long Island, New York, USA. The Gordon family is part of the extremist Chabad sect, which Palestine Declassified has previously investigated. The Times of Israel and its fixation on genocide are unlikely to end anytime soon.
David, the article was advocating genocide against the Palestinian people. I mean, why do you think the Times of Israel took it down? Because, I mean, they actually publish lots of inflammatory material, don't they?
They do, but that was some time ago. And I mean, we're now in a period where that kind of sentiment is more possible and is not seen as being quite so out there because there's such a surge in the kind of far-right character of the Israeli government. So there's a sort of sensitivity to outside views. That's part of the issue here. There is a movement inside Zionism towards the more extreme elements, where genocide starts to be something they can more openly talk about, and that's part of the problem. You see, in, for example, in this country, Zionists who have been to the forefront of smearing the Palestinian solidarity movement as being anti-Semitic are now saying, "Oh well, they're going a bit too far. We didn't mean this. This is not what we've signed up for." So you see the kind of the ambivalence there is now with the shift to the right. That some elements of the Zionist movement have to try and pretend that this is not what they went in the first place.
Mm. I mean, Tony, what do you make of the possible involvement of the Israeli military in actually planting articles, commentary in the Times of Israel?
Oh, I would have think it's highly likely because, it happens all over. I mean, the CIA do the same. So, I mean, why would Israel not do that? Or why would its army not do that? But, I mean, genocide, as you said, I mean, is integral to a section of the Zionist movement. We've left behind the old social democratic ideas. I mean, you now see mobs of Israeli settlers marching through Jerusalem, chanting death to the Arabs, may your villages burn. And you see Smotrich openly saying, we need to wipe out the town of Huwara.
Yes.
So, I mean, the pretense has dropped. I mean, Netanyahu has formed a pact with the devil and he's carried along by it. I mean, not unwillingly, I have to say. And so that is where Zionism is now heading. Mm. And you see people like Margaret Hodge, of course, weeping and saying, this is not what we intended, but that is what Zionism is about.
One wonders whether if Jeremy Corbyn had been the leader when this happened, someone else other than Margaret Hodge had made that commentary, that she might very well have accused them of anti-Semitism. But
That's always possible, because any criticism of Israel, in the end of the day, is not about what Israel does. It's about the fact that it's a Jewish state, so you must therefore be anti-Semitic. Yeah, I mean, that's the logic. Yeah.
No, indeed. But, David, I mean, what's the relevance, do you think, of the Chabad sect to this story?
Well, the guy who wrote that earlier piece, Gordon, he's from Chabad, but he's not, interestingly, not from Chabad in 48 Palestine. He's from Chabad in North America. Now, when you start to discuss the Chabad sect, very extremist sect, and they were responsible for this King's Torah that Tony was talking about, where not only do they justify the killing of Palestinians, but not only Palestinian children, but indeed Palestinian babies, because they will grow up to threaten us in the future. This is a sect where people in the West, in the UK, it has 100 branches in the UK and in the US. People, when you criticise it, they say, "Oh well, that's it. That's over in Israel. That's nothing to do with us." But here we are, the followers in North America, just outside New York, making exactly the same arguments about the need for genocide against the Arabs and the Palestinians. So this is an indication of the kind of ideology of this. Now, Chabad is not a religious Zionist. It's a Hasidic sect. And it's organised all over the world, including very prominently in Russia and in the Ukraine and in the US and the UK. And it's an extremist sect. I mean, it really is extraordinary that nobody says anything about it. And here we are, we've got them, you know, on the record calling for genocide.
Sure. Tony, I mean, how do you see this Chabad question?
Well, Chabad is really a revivalist Jewish religious sect. It's very much like the happy, clappy evangelical Christians, in a sense. It doesn't matter what you've done in the past, but you can be born again as a Jew. And they take their inspiration from the Talmud, which is the oral Jewish law. And you can find whatever you want in the Talmud, good things and bad things. And some of the bad things are that a Jewish life is much more valuable than a non-Jewish life. Mm. So when, for instance, Israeli troops go into battle in Gaza, for example, they're accompanied by military rabbis who say you must kill the civilians in case they were to pose a threat to you. So, yes, I mean, they're really Jewish Nazis when it comes down to it. I mean, they have exactly the same ideology. You kill the civilians because they may represent a threat.
And David, I mean, is there a connection? What's the connection between, you know, Chabad and the sort of so-called price tag attacks?
Well, so the price tag attacks are revenge attacks on Palestinians. They include burning people out of their homes, attacking their homes, destroying their livelihood, and indeed, of course, physical attacks and killings. Now, the price tag attacks are largely carried out in a particular part of the West Bank by a group which is known as the Hilltop Youth. Now, these are the people who are in the yeshiva, the Chabad yeshiva, which produced the King's Torah. And according to the Shin Bet, which is the Israelis' own internal security agency, like MI5 in the UK, they are responsible, Chabad followers, for 80% or more of the price tag attacks. So we see a real encouragement here to direct attacks on Palestinians and indeed direct murders of Palestinians.
Yeah, and talking about this Seth Kahneman character, I mean, what else does he pump money into apart from the Times of Israel?
So, I mean, he in Israel, he funds the Reut Institute, which is one of the key organisations which argued that that delegitimisation was a problem and we had to target the BDS movement because they were delegitimising Israel, part of the strategy which came out of someone like Nathan Sharansky as a minister of the Israeli government. Also, the INSS, the Institute for National Security Studies in Israel, one of the hawkish think tanks there. In the US, the Anti-Defamation League, we mentioned earlier, and the Israel Project, a whole number of other Israel lobby groups there. So, there's a very significant investment in pro-Zionist lobbying, which has its effect in the US and Israel and other places.
Mm. And, Tony, I wonder whether you'd take the opportunity to just say something about your new book, because I think it's caused quite a bit of a stir. And I know you were working on it for a long time. It's been a labour of love, I think, for about 10 years, hasn't it?
That's right. It's
a very authoritative text, as it might say. So I've just started reading it myself. But obviously, you've got some great endorsements.
Zionism was the ideology and movement which created the State of Israel. And contrary to the impression it gives now, it's always found its closest friends amongst those who hated Jews, the anti-Semites, because the anti-Semites wanted Jews out of the countries they lived in, and the Zionists were only too happy for them to go to Palestine. And also their ideology was the same. It was one of racial purity. Mm. So they fitted like a hand into a glove. So my book, Zionism During the Holocaust, details the relationship between the Zionists and the anti-Semites and the Nazis in particular. Mm. The only section of the Jewish community which welcomed the Nazis to power in Germany was the Zionists, the German Zionist movement and the World Zionist Organization leaders, people like Ben-Gurion, who were on record as saying that the rise of the Nazis, the rise of Hitler, was a golden opportunity for Zionism. And they thought they had a trade agreement. Most Jews were boycotting Nazi Germany. The Zionists were trading with it in something called Havarah.
Indeed.
So that's what my book deals with.
The agreement, the transfer agreement that Ken Livingstone got into so much trouble for referencing. But unfortunately, we haven't got time to explore that any further. I'm afraid we're completely out of time, Tony. So that's all we've got time there for this week. So I just want to thank our guest, Tony Greenstein, and our resident expert, Professor David Miller. Look, this show's an important counterweight to the avalanche of misinformation that we've highlighted today. We'll be back with more investigations and analysis. So, until next time, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
God's Month. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. The beautiful days and hours of the blessed month of Ramadan are passing quickly. We hope that God